Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today, in honor of Remembrance Day, I will be talking with a staff member of Guelph Museums, in Flanders Fields Commemorations Coordinator, Jessica Gibson. In case you didn't know, 2015 marks the 100th anniversary of the writing of the poem In Flanders Fields by Colonel John McCrae. McCrae was a highly decorated army doctor whose simple 15-line stanza went on to become the symbol of war remembrance for an entire country for 100 years. And as I'm sure you know, he was born right here in Guelph. Of course, Guelph has been highly proactive in the remembrance of McCrae and his famous words, which were published anonymously in Punch magazine in 1915. McCrae's childhood home is currently a museum named in his honor, and it was recently reopened after renovations were finished in order to feature new exhibits and artifacts. Obviously, though, considering it is the centenary for remembering the poem of Remembrance Day, things had to be taken to a whole new level. And that's where Jessica Gibson comes in as the In Flanders Fields Commemoration Coordinator. She's been working on programs all year to help mark the 100th anniversary of McCrae's poem, including a local art show, a new exhibit, and new educational programs for school children. On top of it all, a new statue of McCrae himself was revealed at the Civic Museum this past summer, with no less than Governor General David Johnson in attendance, which is actually more excitement than Guelph got for its 175th birthday just a few years ago. In talking to Gibson, we touched on the work that the Civic Museum is doing, the new things still being discovered about McCrae and his life and times, and why In Flanders Fields continues to endure as a symbol of national pride and remembrance. So let's go to the interview. I caught up with Jessica Gibson at the Civic Museum in downtown Guelph. So Jessica Gibson, thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you are the In Flanders Fields Commemoration Coordinator. And just for the sake of, you know, making sure we're all on the same page, what does that entail? What's your brief job description?
So my brief job description would be obviously coordinating the commemoration projects that Guelph Museums has undertaken in the year 2015. In response to the 100th anniversary of In Flanders Fields. So that had a lot to do with coordinating the commemoration task force that comes out of the advisory committee for Guelph Museums. I also restructured and redesigned some programs for the commemoration, as well as an outreach exhibit, designing an outreach exhibit, and coordinating the art show that was earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, I did a little bit on the commemorative merchandising that you've seen at McCrae House and a little bit here at the Civic Museum.
Okay. So, in terms of your own background, what made you ending up being the In Flanders Field expert for this 100th anniversary?
Well, I'm definitely not the expert, but I did have the benefit of having the opportunity to pursue this position, because I do have some familiarity with Guelph Museums prior to my hiring and my being hired into this position. I was made aware of the position because of my previous interactions with the museum,
mm-hmm.
and I applied to it and fortunately got chosen for such a significant opportunity. It was really great. But yeah, my background's in history, and I've been in Guelph for the last 5 years, so it's just kind of a natural transition for me. I've been a volunteer with the museum for a long time.
Well, let's talk about the actual commemoration, and in terms of where do you begin, because it's a poem, but at the same time, it's specific to the time period, and the story about what John McCrae was feeling when he wrote it. It was a memoriam for his friend who had just passed away in the war, and then it's become this. It's actually a national symbol of war remembrance now too. So in terms of planning a celebration or a commemoration of the poem, where do you begin?
Well, fortunately, the beginning steps were well underway when I got on the scene. the way it sort of started out with the task force, to my understanding, was that they sort of came together and said, what do we want to see happen with this honoring of the poem? And a work plan was kind of drafted up, and then that fleshed out into a number of programs within the museum and a number of collaborations within the community, nationally and internationally. And it is very much an international response. So that allowed us to have some excellent collaboration with international partners, including the In Flanders Fields Museum in Ypres, Belgium, which was great. So yeah, it was just sort of the thing about the poem is that it's a very much about everyone's personal interaction with it. Mm-hmm. So it was taking the ideas of how everybody felt it should be symbolized on their part, and sort of making it into cohesive programming that aligns with what the museum already does.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of making the festivities distinctive, because we have McRae House in town, which, you know, you can commemorate the poem every day right. by going to McRae House. Yeah. So in terms of how do you make the 100th distinctive and worthy of remembrance, how did you plan that?
Right. Well, I think a big part of it was the Capitol project to mm-hmm. Renovate the site and sort of tell some new stories in that process, make it much more a gallery focused on the man, John McRae, and his life and experience. So that was definitely our largest undertaking. And then following that up with supportive programming down there that embellished the 100th anniversary in particular, and also set a foundation for programming that we could continue on so that we can continue to remember in Flanders Fields every day beyond this 100th year marker.
Well, let's talk about some of the programs. There is the current exhibit that is going on here at the Civic Museum, and that goes till next weekend, I believe.
Yep.
So can you talk a little bit about putting that together?
Well, that was put together by our curatorial team mm-hmm. And organized with the Canadian War Museum. So it's a temporary exhibit on loan right. from them. It's a really excellent overview of a couple of the major events in the First World War and offers some really interesting interactives. And I've never actually experienced an exhibit that can give you such a connection to something that I think, well, it's definitely, the First World War is definitely outside of living memory at this point, and it really takes you back to it. For a lot of people who couldn't maybe contextualize it, I personally have really appreciated having it here. The information and the content is really moving, for sure. I want to say inspiring, but it's
right.
It actually makes you realize just how bleak. I mean, a lot of people can't appreciate it, so mm-hmm. It really does give an appreciation.
Yeah, that's. I haven't been to the exhibit here, but at the National War Museum, there's the recreation of Passchendaele that
right.
is
yeah.
incredibly. It gives you, and you know. Probably not a realistic sense, but it gives you definitely a definite sense of what it was like to be there.
Yeah, it's that connection, right, between the viewer and the information. Mm-hmm. It's just about instilling an emotional response, and they've got a setup in there where you can sort of see what the battlefields would have looked like, and it really makes you think.
Since you brought it up, it seems there's more interest in World War One now, but I guess because of all the centenary
Absolutely.
Markers. You know, last year was the centenary of the beginning. It's the centenary of in Flanders Fields this year, and it'll go on like that till 1918 or till 2018, I should say. So it does seem weird that there is all this attention now to World War One, and the last veteran of World War One died in 2009, I think.
Right.
So it seems a bit weird. I guess maybe not weird because we're talking about 100 years, but in terms of you know, remembering something when there's no one around who remembers it anymore.
Right, yeah. right, yeah. It's not in living memory. I mean, the biggest part of it is the centennial aspect, right? So mm-hmm. from 1914 to about 1919, so then you've got these 5 years of commemoration for the 100th anniversary of various parts of the war. And I think it's significant, just like any history, any heritage, you need to reflect, even if it's not something that people associated with directly. It's very important history. I mean, in 2017, we've got the sesquicentennial of Canada, the
right.
Confederation, coming up, and I mean, there's absolutely no one alive from that, and
right.
And that's going to be a huge movement. So I guess the bigger point is that people feel compelled to honor it 100 years later, even
yeah.
though no one was around when it started. Actually, I did meet a lady the other day who was, though, so that was pretty interesting. So it's just, I think the message isn't so much why do organizations feel the need to drive for it, it's why does anybody, like, it's not just our museum, it's individuals, it's different organizations, that kind of thing. It's been really well received and really well responded to, having sort of acquired and developed a database on it for the museum.
Mm-hmm.
there's been a lot of reaction to it. It's good. It's a dialogue we need to have, considering, yeah, like, that's the whole point, that we don't experience, we don't know what it was to experience it.
Right.
So we should be talking about it to be thankful for it.
Are we still learning new things about World War One? Because you talked about building a database. Is there new, like, pieces of information coming out of that that haven't been explored before?
I think it's just, yeah, again, just like anything. You learn something new about it all the time. Like, with our renovation of McRae House, you know, that content hadn't been updated. And I think, like, the gallery content hadn't been updated in 20 years. We absolutely had new stories to tell about John McRae in that time. Mm-hmm. Just in that span from that exhibit install to today's. So yeah, we absolutely, I would say we are learning new content about World War One and John McRae and all those components all the time.
Can you think of something specifically?
We didn't necessarily know, but was definitely underdeveloped at McRae House was, the story about John McRae as the explorer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Every visitor we've had come in, is very, very excited to see this new story. Anyone who's been to the house previously and coming in now, you know, didn't know this about it, and that's sort of the discussion that we're having with a lot of people, is they want to know a little bit more about John McRae the Explorer and his trip with Lord Earl Grey and stuff. And that story gives the visitor a little bit more information about John McRae the person as well, because you hear these anecdotes, which I think previously it was a lot less anecdotal, and people, you know, definitely relate more with your anecdotal stories about these historical figures. So to hear that Lord Earl Grey said that John McRae outdid, you know, the Arabian Night 1,000 stories by having more than 1,000 stories on their journey.
Right.
Like, that's something that people want to hear and see. And so that was a nice addition to our gallery space now.
They went to Hudson's Bay together, for those who don't know. They were looking for a port, I guess, for trading for the Hudson's Bay Company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, I hadn't known that either, but that was...
It's a cool one, yeah.
Yeah. In terms, you know, we were talking about in terms of his life beyond the poem. In terms of his, you know, being a Guelph native and being born and raised here, what is, you know, some of the background on that in terms of learning more, if you've learned anything more about John McRae or and his life in Guelph?
John McRae and his Guelph connection?
Yeah.
Well, as I said, not the expert here. So anyone looking for more information is definitely going to need to talk to our resident expert, Bev Dietrich. But as for information about John McRae, the boy from Guelph, I have in my outreach exhibit, in the outreach exhibit that I compiled and that I activate for Guelph Museums, some information about him as the hometown hero. You know, even today, walking around, you talk to Guelphites, and even if they've never been to McRae House, everybody knows John McRae is from Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely something that people associate with even today on a regular basis, just because he was just so well appreciated by the community and continues to be well appreciated. And that has to do with, you know, his family's influence in the community. They had a number of businesses over the years of them living there, living here. So that obviously had an impact through the larger community, and you know, his grandparents' farm home is still you can still see it today. Like, it's still up and it's still being lived in. And there's his connections to professionals in the community and that kind of thing, and that spans beyond Guelph too. So,
and it's a very Guelph story. His family, coming from Scotland, establishing here, setting up a mill, and growing the community.
Yeah, and his grandfather's cattle, and yeah, it is very much.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the poem itself, what do you think matters more in maybe the historical context in regards to in Flanders Fields? Does the poem matter more, do you think, or does the man matter more, the man who wrote it in the context he wrote it in?
I think you can't have one without the other, for sure. Obviously, the poem has had the tremendous impact and the international impact. And, you know, I've met with people from around the world who know the poem or who have referenced the poem that maybe didn't know it was who it was written by. Mm-hmm. No, it was a Canadian writer, perhaps. But even my most recent installation with the outreach exhibit, I had people ask me specific questions about him because of their knowledge of the poem. And perhaps that speaks to how previous generations have learned the poem. You know, it was a lot of memory, and it was a lot of reciting the poem and repeating it and trying to retain it, and maybe less of the history, which I think we are really good at presenting. And I think it's something that's developing, the actual history of the poem, as we sort of explore it a little more, develop more of a dialogue on it.
Yeah, I remember learning the poem in school, but I don't remember hearing anything about John McCrae until the Heritage Moment commercial with Colm Feore's John McCrae.
The controversial Heritage Minute.
Is it controversial?
Oh, no, it's just because they the first version said that he was from Montreal, right?
Oh, right.
And yes, so... There's your controversy. He's ours.
Did they ever fix that?
Yeah, they did. Okay. Yeah, they did do a second version of it where they said he was from Guelph and spent a lot of his life in Montreal.
Yeah. Good thing they didn't say he was from Baltimore, because that's where he went to medical school. Then there would have been a riot. But in terms of maybe... do people come in with any preconceived notions about John McCrae or World War One that they come into the museum and they are sort of not set straight? I don't want to say set straight, like it's a lesson to be learned, but in terms of correcting any misconceptions people have?
There aren't too many misconceptions about John McCrae, I don't think. I mean, part of it is a lot of people want to learn about him because they know he wrote the poem, and that's basically the extent of their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge correction we're making, which is great. But yeah, I mean, there's always going to be your visitor that comes in that's the expert, and sometimes we learn from them, sometimes they learn from us. It's always a great give and take relationship in that situation, and I can't think of anything that's particularly out there that I've heard about him or anything, having worked at McCrae's, especially since the Reno, and we've had new visitors and stuff. Yeah.
Is there more of an interest now, do you think? I mean, you haven't done this for very long, obviously, but I mean, in terms of maybe through the year, has there been more interest, or maybe just from what you're hearing from other staff here, is there more interest in World War One or John McCrae than perhaps there has been? And maybe it's because of the centenary.
I think we, especially with our programming, we really got at least the community talking and the community thinking, and a lot of organizations were sort of like when we were prepping kind of thing. A lot of organizations we were hearing about were already prepping as well and already had their own ideas of how they'd like to celebrate and that kind of thing. So I think, again, that just comes back to how readily Guelph associates with his character and with his remembrance. Yeah.
Certainly, John McCrae wasn't the only person who put pen to paper or pencil to paper for you know, writing remembrances of the war and war poetry and that. So why do you think that In Flanders Fields has endured perhaps better than just about any other war poem, even maybe in both World Wars for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, my arts degree is not in literature and poetry, but I mean, the poem was picked up before the war was even over.
Mm-hmm.
It was plastered everywhere. You know, the government was using it for war bond advertisements, and people were resonating with it instantly because, I mean, it was such an impactful and traumatic war that I think people needed something to associate with to sort of rationalize it. So it got picked up before the war was even close to done, and it's just lasted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'll read a lot of things that say, you know, it's the most, I guess, it associates the most with what he was writing about, sort of thing. It's the, I can't even think of what I'm trying to say here. That it, again, it rationalizes it, better than, I guess, most poetry of the time. And because it comes from the perspective of a soldier, and that's, he's obviously not the only soldier that was writing either, but he published it. I don't know if publishing in it anonymously did anything, because it sort of, you've got this faceless author that allows you to sort of take it in as your own.
Right.
Yeah. But the fact that, I think the fact that it was picked up internationally immediately made a huge impact for how tremendous it is now.
Yeah, the right words at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's almost chicken and egg with the poppy, too, with, you know, you see the poppy, you think of the poem, you hear the poem, and it says poppy in it.
Yeah.
The two are tied.
Absolutely, yeah. The poppy was picked up almost immediately as well by the British government and French government and the U.S. government, and the lapel poppy for veterans funding, that kind of thing. Yeah, almost immediately because of that connection, for sure.
What are you most proud of in terms of putting together these commemorative exhibits and commemorative programs? Is there something in particular you're proud of? Interest in terms of the work and not necessarily right. The outreach.
Yeah. Well, it was a big project. And I mean, I'm just so happy with everything that I've got to participate in, and making international connections and local collaborations and seeing how everybody's equally as enthusiastic and inspired by it 100 years later. That's just crazy to me, and still really blows me away every time I do take out the exhibit for outreach and that kind of thing. And I think the outreach exhibit is a big part of it. I've taken it to a lot of places, met with a lot of people, heard a lot of stories, and that's given me, you know, that's given me a lot of development as a person, more than anything. And I've really appreciated the opportunity to be able to do that. And yeah, it's the connections. It's not even one particular program. They were all amazing. Mm-hmm. They were all a really great experience, and we are so happy with how everything turned out. I guess the point that I would hone in on is that I really appreciated being able to feel the same as, you know, hundreds of people and be inspired by it and share that kind of thing.
Was it easier or harder to get people to involved, or do you think?
Well, you know, we didn't go looking for it where it wasn't where we would have had to dig for it. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people came to us. A lot of people were raring to go and contribute to the commemoration. It was, I guess, coming in without the experience of, say, our curator or our programming coordinators, where they deal with McRae on a regular day and see how people interact with it. I was just, I was just blown away by people's response. So, yeah.
In terms of the actual history of it and, you know, World War One, not just, you know, in Flanders Fields, but, you know, having taken this year and sort of looking at the material with new eyes, what do you think the lessons are of World War One and maybe how they apply today?
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one. I guess it's that we don't want to come to something like that again. And I mean, the day says it all, right? It's about remembering. Mm-hmm. It's about honoring the sacrifices. Even if you're not a person who supports the supports the conflict, you can't not support the sacrifice. I mean, these are your fellow Canadians that stood up when others wouldn't, and that kind of thing. So it's absolutely crucial.
And since the commemorations are, you know, are winding up, what's next for you? Do you know what you're going to be doing after the centenary?
Well, I mean, it started out as an internship, which sort of just got contract extensions until the program's done, and we're still doing a lot of wrap-up and debrief on the project, and obviously it's not quite over until we get through Remembrance Day. And so, yeah, I mean, Currently, I'm taking postgrad for museum and gallery studies. So obviously, I'm just looking to see what the museum and gallery world holds for me after this. I mean, it's given me crazy experiences and a really great appreciation for this field and for special heritage projects. So, I mean, that's something that I would absolutely be inspired to look into in future. As for in Flanders Fields beyond today and that project for the museum, like you said, it's something that we'll see every day at McRae House, and the programming that we've done this year has laid that foundation to reinvigorate it next year and the year after. And so, yeah, I got to be a part of a really, really great project.
After this, are you done with World War One, or have you really gotten into it now? And
I don't think I'm ever going to be done with World War One. My previous to this role, an exhibit that I designed for the museum was on World War One and the soldiers of Guelph, and it's a very interesting and inspiring topic, and just like we learn new things about it regularly, I don't think you could ever stop learning things about it. And I've dedicated so much time to it now that it's just inherent to sort of what I work with and what I think about and how I rationalize things today. So definitely not done with First World War.
100 years later, still not done with World War One. Well, learning new things, I think, is a great place to end it on. So, Jessica Gibson, thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Jessica Gibson, the In Flanders Fields Commemoration Coordinator of Guelph Civic Museums. As for the Guelph Politicast, that's all for this week. The theme music for the Guelph Politicast is provided by the Crazy Pills and their song Break It Down, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. The host of the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. You can go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to new past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you've missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. And you can get in touch with me anytime by emailing me at adamadonaldson@gmail.com, or you can reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. For all the latest political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.com, where we will also have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. See you next time.